Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. In case you weren't here yesterday, we got a flood of calls. But I say flood, I mean flood. It's interesting how people really love to learn about themselves in some way, but, you know, you don't want to ask somebody else's opinion. You ask somebody else their opinion of who you are, and everybody wants to tell you who you are. Everybody wants to tell you who you are because they want to get something from you. Your husband wants you to do something for him. He may criticize you and tell you who you are. People want to interpret who you are. A church wants to get you to give money. They tell you what spiritual beings you are. So it's always someone trying to tell you who you are. But yesterday we played a little game. And the game was, I asked you to pick an animal. And if you were to just choose an animal and write down the name of the animal, you'd take three words that would describe that favorite animal of yours. And then I asked you to take a color and put three words to describe the color. And then lastly, I asked you to choose your favorite body of water and three words to describe your favorite body of water. Now, by doing that today, by doing that yesterday, a few people called in with what they had, but here's what I wanted to show you. According to this theory, this idea of radio, of what we could do on radio, it's a cute little game, but according to this idea, the animal is the you that's real. It's the basic, intrinsic you. If you picked a cat, you are a cat. If you picked a horse, you are a horse. If you picked a bear, you are a bear. And I'm going to give you some of the things that people picked, because when the letters that followed, hundreds and hundreds of emails from people saying, telling me, wanting to tell me what they had and trying to hear the interpretation, which they wish they had gotten through on the air today. But we just didn't have enough time to take all of the calls. But let me tell you a couple of things and what we learned from it, because this you could learn is a tool where you could learn about yourself. My interpretation is that the animal that you pick is the animal is the real you somewhere. It's your basic nature. The color, however, is not the real you. The color is the fake you. Your favorite color is the cover-up for you, the camouflage of you. So if you take the three words that would describe your you, for example, if you had a cat is independent, smart, and resilient, like one person chose. And then for a color, they took purple, and they said purple is light, royal, and a girly color. What they're not showing here is they're saying there's a contrast. You see, what you're showing us is what a girly you are and what a light you are, but what you're not letting us know is how smart, independent, and resilient you are, that no matter how flirtatious you may be, nobody's going to get hold of you. See? Okay, now that shows through in all the other things we do as well. Let me just give you an example of some of the things that people said. Here's one that just came in from Ludwig. He's a lone wolf. He said he lurks, he's predatory, and he operates alone. Now, this is a guy who feels this way. Right? His color is blue. His color is majestic, deep, and moody. Now, let's look at this. He has a majestic, deep, moody cover. So when you look at him, you see this moody kind of character. What you don't know is underneath this is a predatory being, one who lurks, who is waiting for his moment, and he operates alone. He doesn't want a partner. So when you see this majestic, deep, moody being, you may be tempted to go over and say, oh, you know, the silent type, maybe he's interesting. Ah, pick a bone. You know, I'm unfamiliar with you with the positive mind. So here's other people's animals. I hope you're getting this because you could use this for yourself. The animal being the eagle. The eagle in this person, it was angelic. The eagle is invincible, free, and independent. Again, the eagle with its beak, the powerful animal, a very powerful animal, an eagle. It's no minor bird, you know. The colors, however, were blue, angelic, soft, and calm. Well, wait a minute. Which one are you? Are you angelic, soft, and calm? Or are you invincible, free, and independent? Truth is, we put out the colors because we don't want people to see our real self because we're not safe. Here's somebody else who chose an eagle, saying soaring, regal, powerful. But then they chose turquoise, calm, earthly, like the water of the Aruba. So you would only see their calmness. What's underneath is soaring, powerful being. Another chooses a bear. This man's a bear. He says he's a bear. He's strong. He's dominant. And he hibernates. But his color is blue. Blue is, but he's blue. He's royal and loyal. Now, here is synchrony. Synchronicity is kind of important when you see this. Sometimes the two things match. Sometimes you say, okay, those two go together. What we want in life is to be a little more to our true selves. So that DMs it. Here's another one. Animal, hawk, vigilant, view from above, solitary. Can you picture a person who's like a hawk? Picture what they're like, you know? They're kind of at a distance. They're kind of solitary. They're like a five in the Enneagram. They're kind of moved away from. Color is blue, rich, vibrant, and stimulating. So they look stimulating. They look vibrant. It looks like you would appeal to them. But remember, they view from above. They're solitary. How many of you picked a solitary animal? Here's a man, here's a woman who said, my animal is a dog. My three words are loving, happy, and sweet, which is what she's really like. Her favorite color is orange, which is bright, alive, and exciting. It all kind of goes together, except that really, she's not as giving as all that. She's putting out a lot of energy, but she really is a dog, and that's loving, happy, and sweet, and someone who needs to be petted. You know, orange is kind of generates its own energy. So this is Armand. I'm going to read you just one or two more. Animal, a wild horse. Wild, free, adventurous. Color, blue, pleasing, calm, peaceful. You know, you just don't see it. Wait a minute. If I am approaching this calm, beautiful, peaceful you at the open center or someplace where you're meditating, I don't know that underneath that is this wild, free, adventurous being because I'm attracted to the color. And more lions. And here's a panther. Stealthy, sneak, sleeky, and sneaky. Stealthy, sleek, and sneaky. The color? Orange. Warm, nourishing. See? So this is like, you know, here's the panther inviting you into their lunchroom. It's all good. The last one is someone, Don, who chose a turkey. Favorite animal, turkey, vain, foolish, and tasty. Now, that's a nice description of yourself. I tell you, Don, I like it. Vain, foolish, and tasty. He really knows himself. His color is white, clean, empty, bright. So what you would do is you would look at it and you would never see the depth of this guy who is vain, foolish, and tasty. Kind of fun, okay? And this is what we do to learn about each other and see each other. Now, what happens after you spend some time seeing the difference? There was a test once called the Hartman Value Profile Test, which I used to work with. Hartman Value Profile Test was an interesting test. It asked you to rank order 20 words. Now, rank order means put them in order of the one that's the most like you and the one is the least like you. 20 words, and among these words would be things like a baby, a uniform, then blow up an airliner in flight, and then torture, and then a good meal. And it would mix all these words in. And you would rank order them, 1 to 20, which one is the most like you, which one is the kindest, which one is the least like you. You know, would you take torture over, blow up an airliner in flight? You know, this is what you had to make a choice with. But you did that, and you chose. Then they gave you 20 questions additional once they got your profile of that. And they got 20 additional values, and they said, these are all words that relate to how you feel about yourself. And you'd get these phrases, my life is good for the world. I have meaning. There is no meaning anywhere. People are only here to fool you. Things like that. And he would have a range of 20 questions going from what's the most like you to the least like you. They weren't concerned with the most disturbed answers. So if you put at the top, my life is miserable, I have no meaning in the world, as your number one choice that felt the most like you, Hartman didn't really, he wasn't disturbed by that. He said, no, that's not what makes you unhappy. Because if you go over to the first scale, and the first scale was your value towards the outside world. Remember now we have your value towards the inside world, the second scale. And the first scale, the one about the baby and the air, blow up an airliner. If you picked torture as the one most like you, or blow up an airliner in flight as the most like you inside one, and then you took on side one that my life is miserable for the inner values, then your inner value and your outer value match. When your inner value and your outer value match, there is a harmony. And you're okay. You get through life. You may be miserable, but you get through life. The worst part is when your outer value and your inner value are not the same. When you have a certain value of how you feel towards the world, and then you have a very different value in how you feel towards yourself, that's where you find a lack of harmony. So if you're somebody, for example, who has great, great compassion for people, but then you have no compassion for yourself, that's disharmony. If you're somebody who is very conscious of what they do for the environment, but you're not conscious of what you do for yourself, that's disharmony. And that's the number of statements that come in here, and this all comes about with us learning more about ourselves. Let's take a look at one aspect of this, which I noticed the other day, which has to do with a kind of a feeling. I don't know if you call this a feeling or a thought. Let's look at pity. Pity. I haven't spoken much about pity. Let's look at pity. I had a friend who was really broken down, went through some surgical stuff. He was really sick. He went from being this very strong, powerful, incredible being to being somebody who was humbled by his illness. You know, he was actually out there. He could barely stand. He was not well. He'd run into people, and people would ask him how he was, and he'd tell them, you know, I'm barely here. I'm not really here. And he would later report, this is a man who was used to getting a lot of people excited about seeing him, how people looked at him with a kind of pity. And he talked about how much that hurt him to see it. Well, what is he talking about? What did they see? Was it just that they saw his vulnerability, that he didn't like the show? Is that what the question was? Pity. Pity evokes a tender or sometimes slightly contemptuous sorry or empathy for a people, person, or animal who might be in misery, pain, or distress. In regard to humans, it's a protective or quasi-paternal feeling of maybe felt towards marginalized or impoverished people, such as homeless people, orphans, people with disabilities, victims of rape and torture, pity. People who have previously experienced the pain of misfortune in question may feel pity more keenly. However, a few people said, including Nietzsche, that pity caused an otherwise normal person to feel his or her own suffering in an inappropriate, intense, alienated way. So here's a question for you. Do you ever feel pity? Do you ever feel it? You feel it for people? You feel it for animals? You know, it's really easy for animals. It's kind of a breeze. Well, what does it mean to feel pity? I mean, is it really difficult to look at somebody who is in great pain or great distress and to look at them with respect instead of pity? What would that take? Let's look at an example of it. You know, somebody says to you, my husband died, right? And we didn't find out. It was sudden. She's weeping. My husband died. The feeling you may have might be pity. You know, well, what is she going to do? How is she going to go? Where is she going to go? You know, it might be pity. What would be another feeling you might have? I look at people all the time. And I look at people who have been through tremendous pain. And some of the stuff that I see, some of what I see with the people who come to see me and talk to me, and their childhoods and what they've been through, it makes me weep. I mean, but I weep a lot. I see things and it brings tears to my eyes a lot. But sometimes I see things and I just go, oh, God, I wish I were there to stop that hand from hitting this child. Oh, what a pity, I might say to myself, that this person had to go through this torment. But do I pity the person? No. There is a respect that this person is just another human who has gotten this far on the planet, and they are here, and we are meeting each other. My pity doesn't help. They talked about the response to the tsunami, and they said the tsunami seemed to engender in people an enormous amount of pity, which sent millions of dollars flying out of America. People couldn't give their money fast enough away for some reason to the tsunami victims. We were just passing the money out as fast as we could. We never really, you know, we started off with sending these people who were in a vacation haven where the tsunami took place, and some of the local areas, you know. There is not one tiny bit less poverty in those areas today. All of that money, all of that stuff that was sent, did not one bit of good for anyone. What did we do? It may have done good, but we didn't feed anybody. We didn't do it. Billions of dollars went there. So the question is, what happened? What is it? What is pity about? Is pity not about the person, but is it about us? Is it about a feeling I want to have because it makes me feel bigger than I am? I pity you. I pity you. Ah, what a pity. You know what I mean? Think about what a pity versus what an ordeal. What an ordeal. Oof. Respect comes with that. With pity, you kind of lose your respect. With pity, you kind of objectify somebody. With pity, that other person doesn't become human anymore. So, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, we know that handouts don't seem to do much good. Handouts of food don't seem to help a great deal. We wish they did. You know, we try everything we can. You know, what seems to make a real difference is when people go in someplace and they stand there and they say, oh, no, you won't hurt this person. You can't get past my body. You know, when that happens, all right, then we've got something. But sending things just because we're going to tithe to some place we don't know because we pity those poor people, I don't know. I don't know. What about the starving people in Canada? I know. I said that the other day and everybody looked at me funny. There's another thing we could also look at, which is a psychological phenomenon, right? It's one thing, called self-pity. Self-pity is the psychological state of mind of an individual in perceived adverse situations who has not accepted the situation and does not have the confidence nor ability to cope with it. It's characterized by a person's belief that he or she is the victim of the event and is therefore deserving of condolence. So, condolence is self-pity is in effect. It's a non-perception of the reality. I pity myself because I am a victim of my cancer. I pity myself because I am sick. I pity myself. Self-pity is a trick. Self-pity is a way of avoiding looking at what's real. Self-pity is a way of trying to get other people to soothe you in some way. In a social context, it may result in either the offering of sympathy or advice. You know, people may come to you and they may be giving you something. Now, self-pity can be remarkably self-sustaining, particularly when you're depressed. See, if you have depression with self-pity, you kind of keep everything going just the way it is. Depression and self-pity. I am not criticizing people who do this. I understand it. But it seems to me that there's some part of us that is holding ourselves back behind this illusion that this is the way that we are the most generous of people. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. We're going to be taking your calls today, as usual, because we've been receiving a lot of information from you, and we've also been hearing from you that you would like us to take your calls more often. And it's an interesting thing, taking your calls, because this is a time for WBAI, this hour, was the public affairs hour. And the public affairs hour meant it's a time when you also have a voice. So it was great. Initially, when we were hired, we had callers coming in a lot, and we would always use the phones, and we'd say at least a third was for callers. Then we got scared. We got scared by the FEC, the FTC. The FEC and the SEC and the BMT. All these people scared us. They scared us because they said if people say bad things on the radio and you let it go, you could lose your license. So we better not take any callers. How do we control them? What are we going to do? How are we going to take people? I mean, what if they say something wrong? And so slowly you'll hear on most radio, people stop the callers. Well, we're lucky, WBAI, here on this radio program. We've been doing this for now 20 years. And in the 20 years, there has never been, well, I think there was one person did something, but we caught it. You know, we have a little delay that we put on our radio and we could catch it before it goes out. But usually the people who phone into this station, especially into this program, are beautiful players. I mean, we're just people who are all together. I mean, they're these hawks and birds and dogs and bears that you heard about before. That's who's listening. You know, I mean, they don't want to hurt anybody. Victims, pity. Now, everybody can claim, you know, to be a victim of something. Usually when you're a victim of other people. Some companies have closed divisions without warning, and all the people who lost their jobs could say they are victims of firing. It's the latest thing, being victims of job losses. However, victims of job losses, so we have this high job loss rate, I keep running into people who are saying, oh, no, I've got extended benefits. I'm not really looking for a job. So, I mean, our high job rate seems to correlate with the extension of jobless benefits, because it doesn't seem like there are many people who are motivated, because the difference between one and the other, Some people like to work because they feel like they're doing something meaningful, right? Heather is in the studio with me today for the very first time here on WBAI. Heather! Oh, my God, you're not going to believe this. Say hello to the audience.
Hi.
How do you like that? Here you are working at the DeMille Center part-time. How's it been for you so far?
It's a lot of fun.
How do you like me pointing a microphone at your nose and saying talk?
It's a little unnerving. Yeah. But it's a lot of fun being here. It's a great place to work.
You're a good spirit. Good. Good, good. People also expect pity when they are victims of bad luck. Now, bad luck, you know, could be anything. You could be a victim of bad luck, truly, you know, the unfortunate luck of the draw. Or victim of genetic mistakes, you know, if you're born with imperfections. That engenders a lot of pity also. A person who loses his job and starts drinking excessively, that can lead to continued unemployment, which, again, pity has a big part in perpetuating this. And then a child who is born with a face that doesn't match itself, you know, that may not be exactly harmonious. You know, it's, again, something that you feel bad about. But it's really something when you're somebody who looks a little unusual or something, and people look at you and they have that look where they know that your life is miserable because you don't look good, and they look at you, it's such a disrespect. It's such a bad feeling on the other side. It means that you don't consider me to be a true human, do you? Just because I'm weak, just because I don't have energy, right? You know, and you know what the world seems to have the biggest objection to, the most pity for? It seems that this world is depressed. And in its depression, it is always looking for the person who could generate energy. When a person gets sick, when a person is in some way infirmed, when a person falls down, when a person is poor, they can no longer generate energy, and they can't walk with their heads up, and they walk almost sucking up energy. They walk around lacking energy. Lacking energy makes the world consider you a non-viable being. And the world kind of wants to push away people who lack energy. It's like, you know, what are you waiting for? Go die or something. So the lack of energy generally engenders a real negative feeling. And very often it may start with pity, but pity is not the kind of thing that we prefer. This is Armand DeMille with you here on WBAI 99.5 FM. We're going to talk about compassion, of course. And we will be taking your calls when we get back from our break. The telephone number here is 212-209-2900. It's always wonderful to talk to you guys, especially the people there who are at the WBAI workshop on Sunday. I'd like to hear from you guys as well. What an amazing group. So 212-209-2900. We're going to take a short break. When we come out, when we come back, we're going to talk a little more about this and be taking your calls. Let me just see. Was there another announcement? Oh, yes. The invoices just went out to the people who donated to WBAI, and the invoices went out to the people who promised. Please pay those as soon as possible, because we could use your bucks. Nice being with you. I'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Hi, I'm Rosie Perez, and this is WBAI, listener-supported non-commercial radio in New York.
Hey, it sounds like the CCCP is going to be on.
That's right, the fourth Wednesday of the month at 2 p.m.
The monthly Laughing Nightmare.
With Janet Coleman, David Dozer, John McDonough, Moogie Klingman, Scooter, Otis McClay, Paul Fisher, Mike Squire, Marshall Efron, and Alphabetti Olsen, Randy Credico, Prince Farai, Red State Update. the Capitol steps and the great Will Durst.
That's some bunch of satirists.
That's right. Rape Your Wits, this Wednesday, June 24th at 2 p.m.
The CCCP.
That was Babby Mason. Babby Mason. And it was very interesting. I was talking to Heather before. Heather said to me that she was taking a course in writing. You said it was in writing that they did this course?
Yeah, it was my freshman writing class.
Amazing. And so when I was playing Wade in the Water, and this is the first time Heather's in the studio helping us out, she said, oh, that's all the teacher would play for us over and over again, which is such a surprise to me because it is such a beautiful Bible music turned into jazz, and I must have 20 versions of it myself, and that's all you heard, right?
Yeah, we did all jazz, and we listened a lot to the spirituals.
Amazing. Charity, we were talking about pity, and we're taking your calls at 212-209-2900. Think about charity as entertainment. The charitable organizations are entertainment businesses, mind you, charitable organizations meant to give out money, meant to spread it around. You know, if you have the right connections, you could get some of it. We never, I don't know, anybody ever use this as a charity? Somebody once made a donation to, everybody makes donations to the station. It's a charity. But mainly, they're not serious organizations. They're trying to make the world a better place. Charitable organizations can explain how their money is helping the world. They can't. They can't explain where their money is going. They never analyze what they do. They get salaries paid is what they do. They pay their own salaries for their own existence. You have to go pretty darn far to get the money that goes to a charity to go to eventually get to somebody who deserves the charity. It becomes very, very difficult. I've seen this. I've seen this especially in Haiti, where money is given in. It never reaches where it's supposed to go. It just doesn't get there. That doesn't mean that you don't have compassion, that you don't have feeling for the people. Of course you do. Of course you do. There was a cartoon I remember where the woman throwing money in the well said, "And this coin is for the tsunami victims in India because I love all people, even those Hindus who worship cows." And that was the cartoon. Because, you know, and I guess what's important here is that pity is about the I. It's about me. It's about me feeling something I like to feel. It's not so much about you. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, I'm on the air. Hello there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hey.
Is it true you broadcast from your own studio?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just find it fascinating how Gary Null and you both have your own, you know, your broadcasting networks. You both have these huge blocks of the week. And I don't know, you once said you made your money down in Wall Street but got bored with it, and then you trained and now you're helping others in, you know, psychological healing. I just found it fascinating. Like, where did all that studio you have get utilized before BAI?
Oh, let me explain it to you.
So interesting.
Okay, thanks for calling in. I'll answer that. Thank you. Thank you. I was here, and WBAI was on 8th Avenue for the longest time, and I run... I have a mental health center. Oh, wait. I've got to get rid of the dial. There it is. So we run a mental health center, and we all work here together helping people, right? And then when WBAI moved down to Wall Street, it meant it moved 40 minutes further away from my office. I'm the director here. How could I figure out 40 minutes to go down there, 40 minutes to go back, the time I need in between to organize? So I looked at it, and we were able to say, what if we built the studio right here? The studio wasn't here before us. So we created this studio, which I'm sitting in right now on 57th Street, and through the good graces of WBAI and the work of Michael G. Haskins and Kathy Davis, they allowed us to broadcast from here. So now I broadcast from my studio. I actually walk out of my office. I go to the studio and I walk back to my office where I could help people in between the times that I would be traveling back and forth to WBAI, back and forth to the studio. In addition to that, because our studio is so cute, efficient, well-built, maintained by Eric Spiegel, who works for Channel 13. And because it's so cute, and Tom Gerby, who many of you have met, because it's so cute and adorable and so efficient, every now and then something goes wrong with WBAI, like during 9/11. During 9/11, the studio was here. They couldn't broadcast. They came up here. There was an electrical failure down there. They couldn't broadcast. They came up here to broadcast. And we would have people coming up here and broadcasting from here because they couldn't go down to the Wall Street site. So it's really kind of amazing. And it's amazing. It taught me how to engineer. It teaches me a lot of things as well. So that's how we wound up in a studio uptown. And any of you who ever came by here have seen it. It's kind of an exciting little place to be. 212-209-2900, except I do miss Michael's face. I just get Michael on telephone, you know. I want to see his face because I think he's a beautiful man. 212-209-2900, let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I was listening to your show about charity and pity, and I wanted to, I guess, I don't know, get some clarification for myself. I had a parent who had a heart attack about 8 months ago, and she's like been in a coma. And at first, in terms of family and friends, I had like a lot of support, and or some support. And as the months have passed by, it's just been harder to kind of have support systems to deal with my mom's condition and like.
Well, let's go into this for a minute, okay? What's your name?
Steve.
Steve. Yeah. Okay, Steve. So I'm going to start this off with you, and I'm going to help you out with this, all right? And I even know your question before you ask your question, all right? Steve, you are pissed off. Steve is angry. Now, I want to get to the bottom of this, because I hear your depression. You're dealing with a mom. This is your mother who's in a coma, right? Your mother's in a coma. You've got no supports. The people you had around you who supported you, they weren't there anymore. Your depression grows because, number one, you're losing your mother. Number two, you feel powerless in the world. And number three, those who you're hoping to support you aren't there anymore. But the secret to this, Steve, is it makes you angry. Now, when you get angry and you don't feel like you have a right to get angry, when you get angry and you couple it with a feeling of powerlessness, it becomes depression. Now, can you tell me I'm way off target?
No, you're on target.
Yeah, so you have brothers?
No.
Sisters?
No.
You have nobody there with you and your mom, just friends?
Just friends and, like, a stepdad.
Yeah. So it's very difficult on you. So who are you the angriest at?
Myself.
And you see, now, there's where the trick is. The trick is, since every animal in the world feels this generation of anger, you know, this anger comes up inside you. You know, you're supposed to be over here. If you were an animal, what animal would you be? Not today, but in your normal course of life, what animal would you have chosen, Steve?
Dolphin.
A dolphin?
Yeah.
Wow, a really free animal, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay, if you were a land animal, what would you be?
Land animal. I guess cheetah?
A cheetah. Good. Okay. You can never trust him because he's a cheetah. No, I'm only kidding. It means Steve is fast, right, Steve?
Yeah.
It means that you perceive yourself as a fast-moving but fierce being. Now, let me ask you something. If somebody was coming near your cheetah cubs and you were nearby, what would you basically say to the people coming near your cheetah cubs? What would your attitude be?
I'd be protective.
All right. Could you make a sound for that protection? With that sound of like an animal's coming towards you and there are your cubs behind you, what sound would you make as a cheetah? Trust me. Go with this. You hear that, Steve? Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go with me, because I'm going to be your brother, Cheetah, sitting there too. And you and me are going to see the people coming towards you. We're going to see these other animals coming like some jackals. They want to eat your kittens. Make the sound. Do that again. Think about the people who have let you down with your mom. And think about seeing them right in front of your face right now. Can you picture some of those folks?
Yeah.
Now make the sound right to their image. Yeah. To each one of them. Yeah. That's the feeling. That's the feeling underneath the depression, Steve. If you stay in touch with that feeling, you know, you're going to be out of that depression. You know, you'll avoid it. Did you see the movie Gran Torino?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, who is the actor in it?
Clint Eastwood.
I saw it just recently. And I saw it just because it was there. And throughout the movie, you know what he's doing with everybody? He's growling at everybody. People come by, and he's just got this growl under his voice. But you could tell he wasn't depressed.
Right.
You know? Something to keep in mind. One more thought to you, Steve. Your mom is dying, probably, right?
Yeah.
And you remember what I said about energy being taken out of the world?
That's why I called.
Tell me why.
Because I always thought I walked through the world powerful, and I feel like now I don't have the energy to walk through the world powerful, and I think people, like, see it, and I feel like I'm being exploited by it, or I'm like I'm a non-being, like you said, and
yeah.
That's why it really resonated, and that's why I called in. Like at my work, like I'm just basically, I don't know.
You feel like you're near tears all the time, and that you're powerless, right?
Yeah.
And that's because you're fierce, and you don't know that ferocity, and you've got that ferocity turned against yourself. At work and everywhere you go, I want you to keep that growl just under your breath a little bit. Just so that when people aren't looking, they could hear it, you know? So, like, it's a little like you're talking to somebody, they're saying, how are you today? Say, I'm really fine.
Okay.
Keep in touch with me, Steve. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
And he was laughing. Steve hasn't laughed in a long time. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. It's Andrew. And once again, you have proven that if you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And there's not a way that you can find to pathologize something, like pity. I realize that, it's a cultural construct in order to get people to do the right thing by people to the best of their abilities, but you, of course, have to pathologize it. And sometimes I think you just say things in order to upset people. Why would a social worker want to get people upset? Is that the same reason that McDonald's wants to make sure that people stay hungry?
Well, let me ask
you something.
Hungry
when they watch your advertisements?
Andrew.
Yeah.
See, you're upset by this concept.
Well, I'm upset by the ability you have to pathologize things that you choose to pathologize. And again, we can go back to
I understand.
Freeform jazz, which you don't pathologize. which you easily could.
I understand, Andrew. Thank you so much.
Wait, no, you don't want to talk to me?
No. I don't want to talk to you because I want to stay on the subject with other people. I understand what you want to do is oppose me. And I understand what you want to do is just keep opposing me as much as you can. I understand that you're not here at all to learn anything. I understand that, and I respect you for it, but I don't want to talk to you about this. Okay? Thanks for calling in. 212-209-2900. I will tell you something about pathologizing, though. The word pathologizing is a funny one. It means to find the aberration in everything. Aberration. And he's absolutely right. One thing about Steve is absolutely right. I see things. And when I see things, I don't see them for what they are. I don't see people's generosity as generosity. And I don't see people's pain as just pain. I don't see pity as pity. I don't even see Steve's anger as Andrew's anger as Andrew's anger. You know, and I will pathologize that, but, you know, he's not a player. He's not somebody who wants to learn with me. If he wants to learn, he'd get on there and we'd say, okay, Andrew, let's talk about this in your life and where this is and how we could learn by it. And yes, I did pathologize Steve, who called, you see, and I told him, oh, your sadness is really your anger. But that's my job. My job is to look underneath the layers and present to you what I see underneath. And pity? Yep, I would much prefer empathy. 212-209-2900, with all due respect, Andrew. Let's take another call. Hi there.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
Good.
I have a question. I have someone who I just recently got involved with, and he has been in AA for 27 years.
Mm.
And he gets kind of schizzy, and he wrote something to me, and I wanted to just read a couple of lines.
Sure. What's your name?
It's Marianne.
Marianne, thank you.
I am a fraud. I profess many things but live few. I have no concept of what love is or how to share it. I live in the past and cannot fathom what it would be like to have someone in close proximity. I would live under false pretenses. I cannot comprehend the words to understand. I cannot be a source of strength for anyone. I am not a real man. I am lazy. I procrastinate. I have a fear of economic insecurity. This goes on and on. And
Wait a minute. I tell you what, Marianne. Mm-hmm. Would you continue just a little longer? Keep going.
Okay. I cannot be a source of strength for anybody. I'm not a real man. I am lazy. I procrastinate. I have a fear of economic insecurity. I'm self-absorbed, self-serving. I am a phony. I recoil from love as a moth does from a flame. I am impatient. I am callous. I am mean.
He recoils from love as a moth does from a flame. But a moth doesn't recoil from a flame.
Well, he goes on.
I was just curious. Okay, go ahead.
I am impatient and callous. I am mean. I put people down to make myself feel better. I go through the motions of caring, but my heart is not in it. I am childish. I am shallow. I have never grown up. I placate people just to get along. I am cheap, selfish. I am burdensome. I am not a real friend. I seek my own comfort over someone else's. I have little to no empathy. I am not grateful. These are character defects I have carried. I will not put them down. I have deluded myself into thinking I could be a friend amongst friends by using lip service, but have no place in anyone's life who is caring and loving. I believe that my drinking was a symptom, and that the only thing I've done for 27 years is not to drink.
Wow.
My question is...
Now, first of all, is this a man you have a relationship with?
Well, and yeah, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Sort of meaning what?
Sort of meaning he's long distance. We knew each other long ago, and we have planned a vacation together, and he professes that he's...
Okay, one of two things. One of two things. I hate this expression, but maybe he's just not into you. You know, and I say that expression because maybe this is just meant to put you off. Maybe, Marianne, he senses that you're the kind of person who would react too strongly by him saying, I rethink this. And so he's trying to put you off with this letter. But I'll tell you something, Marianne. He speaks for most men. That letter is beautiful. I mean, that is one of the most honest things that I've heard a person say. And I would love to get a copy of it, if it's okay with him. I don't want to necessarily spread it around if it's not okay with him.
Well, he's not in New York State.
But even if it doesn't matter because this show goes to Uganda. We just got letters from people saying...
I am aware of that. I should have thought.
But okay. But, you know, really, the truth of it is, Marianne, you're looking for love. And I wish, not saying that he is, but I wish people could find someone like him. Who could be as in touch with himself and who he really is.
Well, may I interject something?
Sure.
He's never had a relationship that lasted more than a couple of years, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, he keeps coming back to me. He wants to go into this. He wants me to know these things. He also wants me to accept these things and work on them.
Sure.
So, I mean, I don't know. And I like him. He's really fun and articulate, and he denies a lot of this stuff, especially the empathy. I see him, you know, he carries on, and he has a job that few people could do.
But you see, the thing that's missing here is, Marianne, it would challenge you to have to look at yourself equally. This man is taking a really deep look, mm-hmm. and he's going to touch buttons in you that you have to challenge. So if you want to take a further look with somebody like him, you got to pathologize yourself.
Yeah, it's true.
You know,
I trust your opinion, so I'm kind
So I'm saying this is going to touch you where you live. One quick question. What happened to your father when you were little?
Well, we had my father. I had one sister out of eight children. My father kind of verbally abused me in protection of my sister. He lived long enough to make it up to me, but every day of my life I was told I was stupid and ugly. And
so he was always at a distance, huh?
Yeah.
Just like this relationship.
Yeah.
So see what I mean? It pays to look inside, okay?
Okay.
Okay, but thank you,
you
for
calling
this, in.
You want this letter?
Yeah, I'd love to, with his permission.
Okay, how do I get it to you?
Email it to me.
Perfect. Okay, Armin. Thank you.
Thank you. Wow. Well, I got to be going. Touched by all of you. Andrew, Steve, Tom, Marion. Hey, I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Want to send me more emails? Feel free. I have fun at armand@thepositivemind.com. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Special thanks to Heather for helping me out today. Thanks, Heather. Be back with you all tomorrow at 1 p.m. Here's Ben Webster with Tenderly.
Michael G. Haskins with a shout out to all WBAI members. From now until July 15, we are taking nominations for the WBAI Local Station Board. All paid up members of the station can place their names in nomination. The Local Station Board oversees management of WBAI. It's elected by the members in a ballot vote. We need an active and committed board representing the broad range of our listener community to help take this station to the next level. To get all the details, go to www.wbai.org or call 212-209-2828. That's wbai.org and 212-209-2828. Ask for Ethan. He's the election supervisor.
Monday, June 29th, between 9 and 11 p.m., Joy of Resistance is proud to present a live, on-air performance of the acclaimed play, Words of Choice. Consisting of 14 short, powerful pieces on a woman's right to choose, including real-life experiences with contraception, abortion, sexuality, and childbirth. The play weaves together words of writers as diverse as June Jordan, Kathy Najimy, and Justice Harry Blackman. It's been performed in 20 states, often on the front lines of struggle. Kansas, Colorado, South Dakota. And after the performance, we'll interview creator Cindy Cooper and the cast on the responses they got in these anti-choice states. So join the Joy Resistance. We're on Monday, June 29th, 9 to 11 p.m. The play's the thing. Find out why one audience member said, Kansas will never be the same. For more information, go to wordsofchoice.org.
Columbia will never be the same after those 61 historic days of the indigenous and popular Minga, which was initiated on October 11th and culminated in a massive rally in the Simón Bolívar Plaza in downtown Bogotá in November. Hi, I'm Mario Murillo, host of the Friday edition of Wake Up Call, inviting you to join myself and Teocasin Ghost Horse for the New York premiere of the long-anticipated documentary A Country of Peoples Without Owners, the Indigenous and Popular Minga of 2008, Monday, June 29th at 7 p.m. at the Labowitz Theater of New York University, located at 715 Broadway at Washington Place in Manhattan. The film A Country of Peoples Without Owners was produced by the communication team of the Association of Indigenous Councils of Northern Cauca, ASIN. Proceeds from the event will be used to help get ASIN's community radio station back on the air after it was sabotaged in late December. For more information, call us at 212-209-2978 or go to mamaradio.blogspot.com.
Please
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.